high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. On this broadcast, Brother Eben and his team reveal supernatural visions, dreams, and prophecies with the accounts of the Bible, real testimony soundbite of heaven and hell that can affect your life eternally. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth, on the right hand of God. Set your affections on things above, not on things on earth. Topical areas include the reality of life, heaven and hell, the afterlife, times, and many more. This program is live every Saturday from 8 to 10 p.m. Be blessed as you are encouraged to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling.
I see prophecies fulfilled. Signs of the times, they're appearing everywhere. Children, yeah, and at the midnight cry, we'll be going home when Jesus.
Good evening to all. We thank God for another Saturday. This is Eben. I'm going to be with you from now till 9:30 when we talk about very important things happening this week in Israel. A lot is happening. Last week I talked briefly about the red heifer, that's the red cows, and this week the news, we have Russia threatening nuclear war and all these things. So it's like a lot is happening this week and we'll be talking about it, and I think that may take all the time. So what I started last week would have to continue God willing next week in that regard, because the Israel related things will take a bit longer. I'll go into a bit details regarding the temple and the red heifer issues and all that. So tonight, I believe we are going to have a loaded session. And yeah, so let me quickly, as we start the news, you know, I'm discussing how events are really beginning to accelerate, from disasters to rumors of wars, the threat of, you know, nuclear, which can become a world war issue. Labor pains are increasing and intensifying, just as Jesus talked about. You look at the world economy, the global picture for the world economy is very, very, very bleak. And even Ghana's own is something else. You know, we've been downgraded again from CCC to now CC by Fitch. Very bad situation. And, you know, situations around the world are not good. I mean, I was reading a financial report on Germany, and it's really worrying, because when the biggest economy in Europe, Germany, is really struggling like this, then it really sends a big signal that times are not normal at all. But we believers, we should see things from a different perspective, you know, from the biblical perspective. What does the Bible say? What did Jesus say? What are we to expect and all that? So we'll be talking a bit about some of these things in this edition of Issues of Life, and I believe you'll be blessed. You'll learn something as well as you've tuned in this evening. Greetings to online listeners, Accra, Cape Coast, Accra Day, outside the country and all. God bless you for tuning in this evening. No, the world is shaking, you know, swarm of earthquakes, 25 earthquakes rattles California's Southern Sea in 24 hours. Then another headline is another powerful 6.8 earthquake has struck Mexico, leaving fatalities and landslides. Then another one, all this week, many more. If you check usgs.gov, you will see the earthquakes that have happened this week. It's staggering. Another headline says 7.6 earthquake that struck Mexico triggered a desert tsunami, quote unquote desert tsunami, 1,500 miles away in the Death Valley National Park. All right, so those are some of the few regarding the quakes. then pestilences. You know, the way Jesus summarized it in Matthew 24, wars, rumors of wars, pestilences, famine, you know, we are seeing these things happening around us. This week, all the headlines are, filled with some of these things. This next one says, Uganda declares outbreak of, quote, rare Ebola species, unquote, following the deaths of at least six. So an Ebola outbreak has officially been declared in Uganda after a person tested positive for a Sudan species of the virus, the WHO said on Tuesday. This is following six suspicious deaths in the past month. Worryingly, it's uncertain whether the existing Ebola vaccines will work against this rarer species of the virus. So that's the whole thing altogether. And then this headline, I won't go into the details, but just the headline, UN Food Chief, that's the Food and Agriculture Organization, warns of, quote, hell on earth, unquote, over food shortage crisis. And the report is quite, worrying. When you read the full details, really paints a very gloomy picture for this, the end of the year, this year, and then into next year. Very worrying picture that is painted by the UN Food Chief. All right, so let's get into some wars, rumors of wars, and all that's happening. You know, in Africa, you have the Tigray region, where in Ethiopia, their war is escalating again. You know, like as if they brokered peace not long ago. There was a little ceasefire, and then gone back again to fighting and so on. But then the big one, we all know, the Russia-Ukraine war, where this week Putin threatens West with nuclear attack and is mobilizing 300,000 reserves. And this has shaken the country. There are riots, protests against this reserve call, like calling, mobilizing people, young men. And some are fleeing the country, running away before they get enlisted into the military by force. So Vladimir Putin issued a chilling new threat to use nuclear weapons against the West, telling world leaders to back off Ukraine, whilst warning, I am not bluffing. The desperate despot also ordered the mobilization of 300,000 military reserves, a first in Russia since the Second World War, and gave a go-ahead for referendums to be held in occupied areas of Ukraine that would make them part of Russia in the Kremlin's eyes, at least. He vowed to use all means to defend the region, saying, if the territorial integrity of our country is threatened, we will use all available means to protect Russia and our people. This is not a bluff. I shall stress, by all means available to us. Those trying to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the tables can turn on them. That's a clear coded message of nuclear retaliation or nuclear attack. And it doesn't end there. Former president, former prime minister as well, Medvedev, Dmitry Medvedev, also, this headline says, Medvedev warns that nuclear weapons can be used to defend annexed Ukrainian territory. So former Russian president Dmitry Medvedev said on Thursday that any weapons in Moscow's arsenal, including strategic nuclear weapons, could be used to defend territories annexed to Russia from Ukraine. Medvedev, who also serves as the deputy chairman of Russia's Security Council, said that referendums planned by Russian installed and separatist authorities in large swaths of Ukrainian territory will take place, and there is no going back. Therefore, various retired idiots, that's what he says. Pardon my words, not my words, he's saying, I'm quoting. Therefore, various retired idiots with generals' stripes do not need to scare us with talk about NATO strike on Crimea, unquote, Medvedev wrote on Telegram. And then goes on to say that hypersonic missiles are guaranteed to be able to reach targets in Europe and the United States much faster. The Western establishment and all citizens of NATO countries in general need to understand that Russia has chosen its own path, he added. During his Wednesday speech mobilizing Russian reservists, Russian President Vladimir Putin made veiled nuclear threats against Ukraine's Western allies. That's another report. We are talking not only about the shelling of Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, which is encouraged by the West, which threatens a nuclear catastrophe, but also about the statements of some high-ranking representatives of leading NATO states about the possibility and admissibility of using weapons of mass destruction against Russia, nuclear weapons, said Putin. To those who allow themselves to take such statements, to make such statements about Russia, I would like to remind you that our country has all the various means of destruction, and for some components, more modern than those of the NATO countries. And if the territorial integrity of our country is threatened, we will certainly use all the means at our disposal to protect Russia and our people. It's not a bluff. So this is from another angle. So we have it there, and this week the UN General Assembly was taking place or took place. So another platform where people come and say what they have to say. And so Joe Biden also took on to accuse Russia of irresponsible nuclear threats and warns that US will retaliate with devastating strike against Russian forces if Putin uses nukes. So U.S. President Joe Biden accused Russia on Wednesday of making reckless and irresponsible threats to use nuclear weapons and said Moscow had violated the core tenets of United Nations membership by invading Ukraine. Speaking at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, Biden slammed Russian President Vladimir Putin for starting an unprovoked war that some 40 UN members were helping Ukraine fight through funding and weapons. Earlier on Wednesday, Putin ordered a Russian mobilization to fight in Ukraine and made a thinly veiled threat to use nuclear weapons in what NATO called reckless act of desperation in the face of looming Russian defeats. So, we have it there. The war issues, Russia threatening, but the EU, one EU top diplomat said that they are not taking these threats lightly because they know he means what he's saying. And one US official said somewhere this week that they are not taking it lightly. They know, you see, what makes it very dangerous now, and that's what the EU official said, is looking at the face of, I mean, the pressure that is now bearing on Russia. I mean, their soldiers are being, you know, they are running away in some areas, fleeing, and looks like defeat is staring at them because US has assisted Ukraine. So virtually, Ukraine is a bit empowered now with modern equipment, the missiles from US, which has made a vast difference, you know. Obviously, without the support of US and the Western help, Ukraine was no match, you know, to Russia. But it's made a big difference with the support they've given. And this now puts a lot of pressure on Russia now. Within his country, there are protests, much more protests, and then they are being arrested. Some divisional leaders, where you can liken it to maybe here, DCs or something like that, started making statements that no, he has failed. He's not doing, I mean, statements against the war. Some have been arrested. So there's a lot of tension within the system in this country. Now, some of his former allies, today I saw one headline, I think the 9th or the 8th of his former allies have died, you know, mysteriously. People falling down from stairs and dying, people falling from hospital window and die, you know. They'll kill you and then they always find a blame for what happened, you know. And so tension is really rising. So when such a person under pressure, who has one of the largest, not the large one of the, he has the largest stockpile of nuclear weapons, that's officially, the numbers that officially is known to the world, then that means you don't underestimate his threats, because he can really, really do the unthinkable. After all, I mean, he who is down needs to fear no fall. So that makes it very worrying, because should he decide to go that way, and that's what Biden too says, that they will retaliate. But see, this whole thing, this morning I was having a chat with a friend, and we were talking about this. She says, this thing, I mean, America and every other country should have left Ukraine. I mean, everybody should sit somewhere. If somebody is fighting and you say you are going to help, now you've widened the fight to everybody. We are all suffering because of this fight. Oh, and I said, someone in the studio say, you know, and that's it. It's like everybody, everything now, Ukraine. Oh. So, if they had left them to suffer alone, we would all not be suffering. But, well, what has to happen has to happen. So, that's how serious it is, that this thing can escalate into something considerably far serious than it's already happening. But, well, as it is, Bible prophecies, there are aspects of it where you can't do anything to stop it. You can't pray it away. The least you can do is to pray for God's guidance, protection, deliverance, provision in the midst of all that is happening. Because we've reached a point where a lot of the things happening clearly are unstoppable. They must happen. And actually, I've been saying it right from the beginning of the year that a lot is coming. We are going to see more things. The second, the last quarter of the year is something else. And tomorrow ends the Jewish, officially today. So tomorrow begins the Jewish calendar. And you know, if you really study it well, it looks like God still really uses the Jewish holidays, their feast days, and all those things. A lot of things happen on those days as well. So the Jewish calendar begins the new year. The Jewish calendar, the new year starts tomorrow. And, okay, when I get to the Israel-related things, I'll talk about it. So it's something. I mean, we are living in very, very turbulent times, and something which means we have to also step up in prayer as believers. We just don't sit down and watch the news and what is happening and complain and just look on and look on. We also have to pray. I mean, not praying to stop what has to happen, but praying for God's wisdom, God's direction, deliverance, all the outlet. I mean, you have to pray. We really, really, really have to step up prayer, because what is coming is far bigger than what we've witnessed so far. Yeah, that's the truth. All right, so Cameroon, we have gunmen kidnap 5 priests and nun and churchgoers after setting fire to the church. Gunmen kidnap 5 priests and nun, 2 churchgoers after setting a Catholic church on fire in Western Cameroon. The region has been a scene of bloody conflict between the Anglophone separatists and the country's government for several years. Those who were abducted from St. Mary's Church in the town of Inchang remained missing. And on Tuesday, AFP quoted the bishops of the ecclesiastical province of Bamenda as saying, as they expressed their shock and utter horror. Archbishop Andrew Nkea said the kidnappers have given no concrete reason for last Friday's attack. You know, a lot of things happening against Christians in various countries. Next one, Nigeria. There now, there is like a standard protocol. This week I was talking to one friend, he's in Accra, we were chatting, and then this issue came up. And where he went to do his PhD, he was telling me that one of his mates came from the northern Nigeria, and he told him that, you know, now he is in South Africa lecturing there, like this friend, this Nigerian friend is lecturing. He said he is not going to his hometown, because if he goes, that means then he's just looking for trouble and kidnapping, because if they know that, oh, Dr. Des has come, that means then he's a Christian too, then that means, oh, then that means potential for money, kidnapping the family, kidnapping and all. So, and the issue is really serious. If you talk to people who really know what is happening in northern Nigeria, it's quite a worrying thing. Christians are at the end of this whole thing there. Dozens of religious freedom groups urge State Department, that's the U.S. State Department, to take stronger stance on Nigeria. And I understand why they are making this call, because the posture of this government in the U.S. now is quite unfortunate, that they even delisted Nigeria from countries that were persecuting Christians. I mean, can you imagine? When the numbers were rather going higher, this government rather saw it opposite. It's quite interesting. So an international coalition of religious freedom advocates and organizations from across the political spectrum are calling on the U.S. State Department to redesignate Nigeria as a country of particular concern and appoint a special envoy to evaluate Christian persecution in the West African country. On Monday, a coalition of 33 organizations and 35 individuals sent a letter to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, asking the Biden administration, to designate Nigeria as a country of particular concern, a designation signifying governments that have engaged in or tolerated particularly severe violations of religious freedom. The letter calls for a special envoy to investigate the situation and make recommendations in consultation with local representatives. The letter comes as some human rights advocates have warned for years that predominantly Christian farming communities in the country's middle belt are often attacked by predominantly Muslim ethnic herders. Additionally, the presence of Islamic extremist groups like Boko Haram and the Islamic State in northern Nigeria has pushed millions of people from their homes. The Nigerian government has denied that religious persecution is taking place. Can you imagine that? I mean, that is the most ridiculous statement of all, to deny that this is even happening in the first place. I remember reading one statement by the government's spokesperson, the president's spokesperson or whatever it is. And it's like, wow. I mean, as if nothing is happening. I say, so why complete lie, as if all the persecution reports are just some noise that people are making? So if it comes from the top of the government, then you know that then clearly there's nothing that will be done. Because if they deny that it's not even happening, then what is there to be done? Nothing. And that's exactly the situation they find themselves in now. Additionally, the presence of ethnic Islamic extremist groups like Boko Haram and the Islamic State in northern it goes on to say the Nigerian government has denied that religious persecution is taking place, calling the violence responsible for thousands of deaths in recent years part of decades-old farmer-herder clashes. The CPC designation and special envoy are vital to recognizing the gravity of the religious freedom violations occurring in the country and the government's unwillingness to control the problems, as well as its contributions to the problems, the letter states. The letter was organized by ADF International, a division of the Religious Liberty Advocacy Organization, Alliance Defending Freedom. Other organizations that backed the letter include the Family Research Council, International Christian Concern, the American Humanist Association, the Southern Baptist Conventions, Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, and some other groups as well. Well, I really doubt this letter will make much impact, because the U.S. government now, they, no. They, if it's about Christians, forget it. They don't see it as a priority. In Nigeria, again, radical Fulani kidnap pastor and dozens of Christians in church raids. So suspected Fulani herdsmen abducted dozens of Christians from a church service in northwest Nigeria less than a week after kidnapping nearly 60 members of the same denomination in the north central part of the country, sources said. In the northwest Nigeria, the suspected herdsmen and other terrorists who raided the nighttime service of the Cherubim and Seraphim Church in Seluja, Niger State, at about 2 a.m. on Saturday, kidnapped the pastor and other Christians, according to area residents. The congregation was holding an all-night vigil church at church site in the Japap area of Suleja at the time the attack by Fulani herdsmen, said the Suleja residents, Nathaniel Adi. Another town resident also identified the assailants as Fulani herdsmen who were predominantly Muslim. the Fulani herdsmen kidnapped the pastor of the church and some of the members, according to Musa, in a text message to Morning Star News. Soldiers from the Zuma Rock Barrack Suleja, who rushed to the church to rescue worshippers and repel the attackers, got there hours after the attackers had left with the kidnapped victims. And normally that's what they say happens. Because the soldiers themselves, they don't want to put their life on the line. So when they even get a report, the soldiers and the police, the way it's after the people have gone before they rush, by the time they come, the action is gone. And that's exactly what happened in this case as well. Because, I mean, seriously, sometimes if you see some of their videos, these people are well better armed than the police and even the soldiers. So why would they go and put their lives at risk? That's where the whole issue is. So back to the government. I mean, the government is not really helping the situation. And that's very unfortunate. Very unfortunate. All right. So let's get into some of the abnormalities happening in the world, where we have Air Force Academy. That's the U.S. Air Force Academy, one of the academies. Diversity training tells cadets to use words that include all genders and drop mom and dad. So a diversity and inclusion training by the United States Air Force Academy in Colorado instructs cadets to use words that include all genders and to refrain from saying things like mom and dad. There's a slide presentation titled Diversity and Inclusion: What is Why We Care and What We Can Do, advises cadets to use person-centered and gender-neutral language when describing individuals. Some families are headed by single parents, grandparents, foster parents, two moms, two dads, etc. Consider parents or caregiver instead of mom and dad. The presentation states, use words that include all genders, folks, you all, instead of guys, partner versus boyfriend or girlfriend. So, you know, you look at what is happening in this issue of gender, and it's baffling, really baffling. I mean, I read one news today in Massachusetts, one district where the textbook, the gay textbook for children, I mean, open, the textbook itself says I'm gay. That's the cover of the book, and it's been put in the libraries of the schools, made available. So, well, if you're a parent and you don't understand, file a complaint. And it's like, is it like an agenda to really, we are destroying the children as young as we can? Another state, I've forgotten which one, Kra, that one too, children are going to be taught, I mean, about anal sex as part of the syllabus. You can't opt out as a parent. Your child cannot be opted. I mean, and so you look at the situation where destroy the society, the generation, by indoctrinating them with all these things which they do not need to learn. I mean, who cares about these things anyway? Why do you have to teach them these things? But it's being taught. And then now, at the higher levels in some institutions, such as the Air Force Academy, now they are bringing this wokeness, that's this gender thing, gender identity, and all these things. When China and Russia are preparing to attack you, the U.S., you are now busy looking at gender, talking of gender. These people, and, you know, it's amazing how... And if you read some reports, now they are struggling to even enlist the numbers they desire into the U.S. Army. I mean, all the arms. Because of some of this wokeness that they brought in, this LGBT thing, acceptable. I think I read one news here some months ago where one battalion or something, it's been agreed that, well, they can all use the same bathroom, so no gender difference. So imagine ladies bathing in and then guys can also just walk in there and go and bath. The people who are instituting these measures, as if they just can't think. But there's an agenda to intentionally break morals, let people just do the unthinkable. You see, it's all about cause people to sin and sin and sin and sin and sin and sin. And that's what the world is now in these Western societies. They wish they can really push their things on us easily. But Africa has been a bit more stubborn when it comes to this LGBT thing. But they are not giving up because they keep talking about it. Joe Biden keeps talking about it. It's time to, you know, they really want to have their way where they can eventually, maybe they'll just get through to the UN. And that's what I suspect eventually may happen, where some of these mandates will now be coming from the UN level, where it's like, well, everybody is agreeing to do these things and accept these things. And, well, when we get there, we see how things will shape up. But I believe Africa will still resist some of these things, maybe unless they tie it to some harsh economic conditions, which, you know, a poor person is always a beggar. And in this poor country, it's always a beggar to these whites. I mean, and it's like, because we beg them for all these things, eventually some of these things may just be tied to it and you have no option than to just give in. But I hope we just don't get there. This interesting headline in Christian Post says, Mark Driscoll, he's a pastor, temporarily suspended from TikTok for saying, can you imagine, men cannot have babies. And who doesn't know this? Even a little child, 2 year, 3 year old, knows. So if you say the truth and the facts that men cannot have babies, why should you be suspended for saying the truth anyway? A biological fact and the truth. All these years has been a fact. Nobody questions you when you say men cannot have babies. Until a few years ago, recently, that now, the question of who is a woman became a topical issue. Learned people cannot define who is a woman. You know, sometimes when you watch some of those interviews or presentations at U.S. Congress and courts, and it's like they are asked, so who is a woman? And you see people fumbling. It's like, because you don't want to say something which will offend those people. I mean, how can adults be in a position like this where what is obvious? You say no. So this pastor, Mark Driscoll, an outspoken senior pastor of Trinity Church in Scottsdale, Arizona, says he was briefly suspended from the popular short-form video hosting service TikTok for declaring on the platform that men can't have babies. What happens on TikTok when you say that men can't have babies? Driscoll tweeted Saturday with an image of a notice of a suspended Twitter account stating that he was prevented from posting due to multiple violations of the hosting services community guidelines. This word, community guidelines. Those times when I was on Facebook, you post something, community guidelines, they block it. No. The suspension of the account ended on Thursday. In his reaction to the restriction by TikTok, Driscoll cited Romans 1:18, which says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth." Wow, isn't that the truth? That's the truth. The Bible says it all, the truth. Interesting. Okay, so now we have some Israeli-related news. Before I go to the Israeli one, let me read this one. Maybe excerpts of it will help. One financial report, I think. Yeah, that's about Germany. And, you know, so that people have an idea exactly what is happening in the world. You know, sometimes people have no clue what is happening in other places. Okay, so this one says, economic collapse has arrived in Germany. And goes on to say that things are starting to get really crazy in Germany. The Germans are dealing with the worst inflation crisis that they've had since the days of the Weimar Republic. And meanwhile, economic activity is starting to shut down all over the nation. Of course, other European countries are facing similar problems. But Germany was supposed to be the economic rock of the rest, that the rest of Europe could always depend on. Unfortunately, there is this decision by the Russians to cut off the flow of gas through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline is hitting Germany extremely hard. If we could just get both sides to agree to end the war in Ukraine, that would greatly help matters. But that simply isn't going to happen. In fact, it appears that Vladimir Putin has decided to greatly escalate matters, and the Western powers will inevitably greatly escalate matters in response. What this means is that the economic turmoil that we are witnessing in Europe isn't going anywhere anytime soon. This week, we got some inflation numbers out of Germany that are so high that it's difficult to believe that they are actually real. German producer price rose in August at the fastest rate since records began in 1949. Can you imagine that? This is just after Second World War. Data released by the Federal Statistical Office showed today, the article was written earlier in the week, pointing to a further increase in consumer prices. Producer prices of industrial products rose by 45.8% compared to the same month of last year. Compared to July 2022, prices rose 7.9%. And in Germany, for something to rise by 7.9%, it's a big deal. Oh yeah, very, very, very big deal. Soaring energy prices on the back of Russia's war against Ukraine remain the main driver behind rising prices. If we continue to see monthly increases of around 8% next year at this time, we could be talking about a yearly jump of close to 100%. How bad do things have to get before we actually start using the term hyperinflation? Energy prices are the biggest reason why inflation has gotten completely out of control, and the German government has been forced to nationalize a huge natural gas company in order to keep it from going under. The German government is closing in on an agreement to nationalize gas giant Uniper SE as Berlin moves to stave off a collapse of the country's energy sector. A provisional agreement between the government, Uniper, and its shareholder, Finland's Autumn Urge, has been reached, according to people familiar with the situation. Whilst contracts haven't been signed, Berlin is aiming for an announcement next week. According to the CEO of Uniper, the company has been losing around, 100 million euros a day due to the energy crisis. So sometimes I ask myself, is this war real? Is it really worth it that the West went to support Ukraine? Because it's because of that they are suffering now. I mean, sometimes if you really analyze it, is it really worth it? You sacrifice your good economy, your citizens, push people from middle class into poverty zone just because you are supporting a country. Is it worth it? Well, that's one question I keep asking myself. Needless to say, the German government cannot save everyone, and so a lot of firms won't survive this crisis at all. For example, a manufacturer that has been making toilet paper for Germans for nearly 100 years is now headed into insolvency. Hackel has been a German household name since 1928. This was even before the Second World War. But the Düsseldorf-based toilet paper manufacturer said it took was this summer's gas price shock to drive it into insolvency. Sadly, this is just the beginning. According to German Central Bank, the nation is moving into a broad-based, prolonged decline in economic output. Economic activity may pull back somewhat this quarter and shrink markedly in the autumn and winter months, the central bank said, adding that it didn't forecast this adverse scenario in June. Bundesbank continued, there are mounting signs of recession in the German economy in the sense of a clear, broad-based and prolonged decline in economic output. It said a contraction is expected in the third quarter with deeper declines in economic activity in the fourth. High inflation and uncertainty with regard to energy supply and its cost affect not only the gas and electricity sensitive intensive industry and export business and investments, but also private consumption and service providers depend on it, according to the central bank. You can refer to such a scenario as recession or depression if it makes you feel better. It and then goes on to say, the U.S. economy will soon be experiencing immense turmoil as well. According to billionaire Barry Stentlich, the federal government's or the Fed's, policies are pushing us towards serious recession. And it goes on and on. You know, and this is just a glimpse of Germany. And if you read the report further and further, companies have started laying off and all the things. The world is just not what we used to know. And clearly, it's unfortunate, but that's the fact. That the picture doesn't look good. The output, if you look beyond the memes ahead, all the economic indicators are not pointing in the right direction. The predictions and analysis of aspects that the West is even ahead for the world economy. And, you know, when the world economy at large is being affected, then you can imagine what our little economy here will feel like. Already we've been crying out as if the Ukraine war, we are the biggest casualties. But, you know, it shows the signs of the times. These are all realistic biblical prophecies of economic difficulties. There will be, you know, all these descriptions of difficult times. You know, we didn't really anticipate it this way. You know, you read the Bible, you see the prophecies, but some, for whatever reason, we assume we'll not feel it, we'll not see it, we'll not experience it. But it seems, well, things are not going the way we had expected. And that's how it is. So we just have to brace ourselves. But as believers, we should understand things from a different angle. As I keep saying, we have a God who does not sleep. We have a God who is in control of all that is happening. He will provide for us. He will guide us. He will protect us. He will deliver us. We just have to put ourselves in a position that we can fully, fully, fully benefit from His love, His provision, and all that. I'll take a little break, play a song, and I'll come and continue with the other aspect of the reports, which are the Israeli-based one, because that's my emphasis today. I'll be back after this song. And that's which one? Okay. The program is Issues of Life. Okay.
I hear the sound of a mighty rushing and it's close than it's ever been. I can almost hear the trumpet as Gabriel sounds the call. I look around me, I see prophecies fulfilled. Signs of the time, they're appearing everywhere. Oh, I can almost see the Father. Children,
Beautiful song, Midnight Cry by Michael English, and he did this rendition with the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir, one of my favorite choirs. You know, the signs of the times. Now, it's just amazing. Last week, I read about the Red Haifa that have been delivered from the U.S. to Israel, five of them. That was on the 15th September, I believe, that they were taken there. But I want to go into a bit of details regarding that aspect because it's quite an important thing regarding the times, Bible prophecy and all that, so that we understand exactly what the implication is, what it means and all that is happening. You know, first at the UN meeting this week, the Prime Minister spoke about he being ready for a two-state solution, where that means Jerusalem will be divided. And Joe Biden also talked about it as well. It's quite strange. This is the first, almost like the first time in modern, recent time that Israeli Prime Minister has spoken about this at the UN to say that they are ready for it. And as to whether the whole Israeli populace supports, that's a different ballgame altogether. But at least the Prime Minister said it at the UN. And that means quite a lot. All this while Netanyahu has not been on the opposite side, not to divide Jerusalem. But Lapid, the current Prime Minister, said it, that, well, the two-state solution is a possibility. And the two-state solution, what they mean is divide the land, Jerusalem, the East Jerusalem will be for the Palestinians. And you know, Jerusalem is not just a city. It's the city of the king. I mean, to the extent that Jesus even said, you should even swear by Jerusalem because it's the city of the king. Not a king, human king, but the king of kings. You know, Israel, it doesn't matter how we believe or what people perception or believe, Israel is not like any other nation. No, no, no. It's not just like any other nation. We have all the 200 and something nations and territories. But Israel is unique in its own category by the fact that the spiritual dimensions regarding Israel, the location, the biblical history, archaeology, all the things about Israel makes it a very unique country and a unique land. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. I mean, it's even an instruction for us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And as believers, when we understand the importance of Israel relative to the end times, Bible prophecy and all that, then we understand a lot of, when some things are happening or coming out from Israel in the news and all, it should excite us as believers because it gives us some confirmation that the Bible we read is very, very authentic and very true. Because clearly, if you look at the things prophesied, Old Testament, that they will become a nation again, the language will be revived again, and all these things have become a reality, Israel as it is. I mean, the fact that the Israel nation today exists is even prophecy. The fact that there is Israel nation, a nation that we can call Israel today, is a prophecy itself. So the existence itself is a prophecy in the first place. And a whole lot of other prophecies have been fulfilled regarding their land and all that. But this evening, let me talk about the red heifer and then the temple. I got some very insightful two or three, that I believe it really addresses the thing well from a very good perspective. Biblical perspective as well. So let me just see if the 35 minutes left, I can really squeeze myself into these things and get it done so that at least our listeners can be enlightened and understand some of the things we talk about on this program. So this one says, the red heifer in the third temple in end time prophecy. So we have, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is the requirement of the law that the Lord has commanded. Tell the Israelites to bring you a red heifer without defects or blemish, and that has never been under a yoke. This will be the lasting ordinance, both for the Israelites and for the aliens living amongst them. This is Numbers chapter 19. You can write the verses I'll be quoting and then take time and read them later on. Numbers 19 verses 1 to 2 and then verse 10. So Numbers 19, verse 1 to 2, and then verse 10. That's what I just read. Then the dome of the rock stands defiantly on the Temple Mount where the Holy Temple once stood. The second temple was destroyed by the Romans in AD 70 after the Jewish people fought to keep the temple pure from the Roman idolatry. As the last remnant of the temple, the Western Wall, which is also called the Wailing Wall, is below the Temple Mount, is the traditional place where Jews gather to pray. So throughout 1900 years or 1900 years of exile, the Jewish people yearned to return to Israel and build the third temple in Jerusalem and restore the temple service. Three times a day, observant Jews pray, quote, "May the holy temple be rebuilt speedily and in a day," unquote. Although Jewish people have always lived in the Holy Land, after the Holocaust, the Jews began returning to Israel en masse. And then in 1948, the Jewish nation was prophetically reborn. And that's Isaiah 66:7-8. As the state of Israel. And ever since, Jews have been streaming back to the land from all corners of the earth. And this week, there was they call it Aliyah. And that's the Jews returning back to their homeland. This week, there was one, I saw one news like that, where Ethiopian Airlines, where Ethiopian Jews going back. And people have been going. They've been from various parts of the world. I mean, Russian Jews, Ukrainian Jews, all type of Jews, various countries are going back to the Holy Land. And this is prophecy as well. So, it goes on to say that since 1967, there has been a movement in Israel to rebuild the Holy Temple. However, the main obstacle is that the Temple Mount is currently occupied by the Dome of the Rock. And this is where the Islamic, where the third holiest site is. So, that's, of course, the bigger issue there. Huh? So, then if he says that, the Bible says in he will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth. And this is to do with the Aliyah, like going back and all that. So Isaiah 11:12. You can also read Jeremiah 23:3-8. Ezekiel 28:25, Ezekiel 11:17, and then Zechariah 10:6-12. Then the glory of this present house will be greater than the glory of the former house, says the Lord Almighty. In this place I will grant peace, declares the Lord Almighty. That's Haggai 2:9. So today, many of the preparations for the third temple have already been completed, as I said last week, including the sacred worship vessels, the priestly garments to be worn by the Levites in the temple services, as well as over 500 young Jewish men descended from the tribe of Levi have been trained as temple priests to fulfill their duties of worship and sacrifice in the temple. You know, they use the DNA technology to identify those who are truly of the tribe of Levi. But the temple service can't begin without a para. They call it para aduma, that's in the Jewish, but that's the red heifer. What does a cow have to do with rebuilding of a holy temple? How could a simple animal play a vital role in the success of or failure of such a monumental event? God's word states that only the red heifer can restore the biblical purity needed to rebuild the temple. So I'm quoting Numbers 19:4. Then Eleazar the priest is to take some of its blood, that's referring to the red heifer, on his finger and sprinkle it seven times towards the front of the tent of the meeting. This was the first, structure that was built to house the presence of God, as it were. So, and then it goes on to say Numbers 19:1-2 and 10. So an unblemished, pure, and red heifer is the key ingredient to temple worship. A man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and put them in the ceremonially clean place outside the camp. They are to be kept by the Israelite community for use in the water of cleansing. It is for purification from sin. That's Numbers 19, verse 9. According to the Temple Institute, this is the institution that has been mandated regarding the third temple. So according to the Temple Institute, the organization dedicated to preparing for the construction of the third temple in Jerusalem, these cleansing waters are necessary to ritually purify the temple mount area, the sacred vessels, and the entire Levitical priesthood that are all being prepared for service today. The waters of sanctification were also sprinkled onto all those who were impure, and many were first purified in this process before entering the courts of the temple. You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is amongst them. That's Leviticus 15, verse 31. Many conditions may cause ritual impurity or defilement, but one of the most severe comes through exposure to death, defilement from contact with the dead, which is called tumus meis. And then this state of uncleanness lasted 7 days and prevented a person from participating in the community or temple worship. Although various methods may be employed to cleanse a person from other forms of defilement, such as ritual water immersion, the ashes of the red heifer is the only remedy for the defilement that results from contact with the corpse. Although some Jews and Christians think that the red heifer is something from the past, never to be seen again, Ezekiel, who prophesies about the rebuilt third temple, also mentions these waters of purification in conjunction with the red gathering of Israel, linking the red heifer to the end times and the coming Messianic era. For I will take you out of the nations, I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back to your own land. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. That's Ezekiel 36, 24 to 26. Ezekiel 36, 24 to 26. So the mystery of the red heifer, what's it all about? The rabbis consider the red heifer one of the greatest mysteries of the Torah. Even they wonder how it's possible that the ashes of a sacrificial animal can purify from sin and defilement. Furthermore, in an apparent paradox, these same ashes that purified also made anyone involved in the red heifer preparations, from the person who gathered the ashes to the person who sprinkled the water, unclean until evening. The commandment regarding the red heifer is such a mystery that the rabbis place it in the category of shukim, that's divine decrees that cannot be understood by our limited human understanding. Kosher and dietary laws also fit into this category. Some Jewish sages believe the ordinance of the red heifer to be connected to the sin of the golden calf. You know, when Moses went up to the mountain and they decided to build a golden calf to worship. So the red heifer is believed to serve in some way as an atonement for the terrible consequences of the Israelites worshipping the golden calf when they were brought out of Egypt. That's what some of the theologians believe. But then goes on to say that ultimately, however, understanding the reasons behind the red heifer and the mechanisms of its purification process is beyond our intellectual capacity. Nevertheless, there are those Orthodox Jews who are willing to humble themselves and obedient in performing it because they love and fear God. Then he took a book of covenant and read it to the people. They responded, "We will do everything the Lord has said. We will obey." Exodus 24, verse 7. So now comes in the third temple. In order for a cow to qualify as a red heifer for this holy purpose of purification, it must meet the following requirements, as outlined in Numbers 19 and also in the writings of the oral tradition of the Talmud. The red heifer must be absolutely perfect in its redness. Even two hairs of any other color will disqualify it. Even its hooves must be red. It was to be 3 or 4 years old. Although older animals could be used, younger could not. It must be 3 It must be free of any kind of internal or external defect or blemish. It must not have been used for any kind of physical labor and never have been placed under a yoke, not even once. Only an animal that meets all these requirements may be used to provide ashes of a purification process in fulfillment of the commandments. The animal was technically a sacrifice since it was not slaughtered and burned in the temple. Rather, it was slaughtered on the Mount of Olives outside the camp. That's Numbers 19 verse 3. The Temple Institute, which has already prepared the sacred temple vessels, has in the past identified two possible red heifer candidates, 1997 and then in 2002. Although both were initially thought to be kosher, they later found to be unsuitable. Even Christian Zionists in ranches in Texas have tried to produce red heifer that they hoped could be transported to Israel. Still, efforts to produce the are ongoing. So this article was written earlier. So this was before this current movement of the red heifer from Texas to the to Israel. But rare is the operative word. Such a perfect creature is so elusive that its ceremonial burning has seldom happened in all of Jewish history. The Mishnah, which is the authoritative written embodiment of Jewish oral tradition, teaches that only 9 red heifers were sacrificed from the time of the tabernacle worship until the second temple was destroyed in 70 AD on the Tishvah. On the Tishvah. That's the Jewish man Tishvah. Then the Jewish sage Maimonides, believed that the 10th animal would only be found and sacrificed when the King Messiah was ready to appear. The 10th one. So they've done 9 so far according to their history, but then they believe the 10th one would only be found and sacrificed when the King Messiah was ready to appear. That's quite interesting. And this is one reason why many Jews and Christians wait in anticipation for the discovery of that perfect, unblemished, and red heifer capable of inaugurating the service of the third temple, which the Bible seems to indicate will play a central role in the spiritual life of all mankind. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted on my altar, for my house will be called the house of prayer for all nations. This is Isaiah 56 verse 7. The Jewish sages believe that when the Messiah comes, he will stand on top of the roof of the temple and proclaim, "Humble ones, the time of your redemption has arrived." This is according to the Temple Institute. Despite the willingness of many Jewish people to rebuild the third temple and reinstitute the temple service, including the slaughter of red heifer, the Jewish people have been left without a temple in Jerusalem to perform the animal blood sacrifices that make atonement for sin. Because of this, blood atonement is no longer a focal point in Judaism. The focus has been put on doing charity, good deeds, and prayer about all this 9,942 years. That's a long time. And that's why the concept of blood atonement is far from the Jewish people. This is one of the reasons why it's difficult for Jewish people to connect the messianic prophecy of Isaiah 53 and the concept of the blood atonement for the forgiveness of sin that's by Jesus' death on the cross. Yet, it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he poured out his life, that's abbreviated, okay, he escaped, and then he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors, for he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. Isaiah 53, 10 and 12. The red heifer itself prophetically points to Jesus, the Messiah, and his death on the cross. He who was perfect, unblemished, and sinless took upon himself the sins of the world so that we could become the righteousness of God. That's 2 Corinthians 5:21. Just as the red heifer was slaughtered outside the camp, so was Jesus slaughtered outside the city of Jerusalem. Hebrews 13 verse 12. The book of Hebrews confirms that it's through the blood of Jesus the Messiah that we may be purified from all our sins. The blood of goats and bulls and ashes of a heifer sprinkled on those who are ceremonially unclean, sanctify them so that they are outwardly clean. How much more then would the blood of Messiah, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from acts that lead to death, so that we may serve the living God? So this article was written way back, but you know, ultimately it's all about Jesus. But the practice, the temple will have to be built because it has to be there in the end time. But because of the written laws that the heifer should be there before a third temple can be built, that's why this search has gone on for years and now they found it. So that now opens up the fact that how soon will the temple be built. And I like this article by Christine Dagg. I'm coming to read this one. This is a Christian view of the coming temple. I just wish I can finish 18 minutes. Well, let me see how fast I can go. If not, then we continue God willing next week. So a big topic in New Testament Bible prophecy, the building of the third temple. The Temple Mount in Jerusalem is the focus of ongoing Bible history and prophecy. This is the center of the world, where Abraham offered up his son Isaac, where King David purchased land, and where his son Solomon built the first temple. It is also where Jesus cleansed the temple and the poor widow gave an offering of 2 copper coins that Jesus said was greater than all the most extravagant donations. Ancient biblical Mount Moriah is Jerusalem's most recognizable landscape. To the Jews, it is called the Temple Mount. To the Muslims, it is the noble sanctuary. Since Israel recaptured the old city of Jerusalem from Jordan in 1967, the Jewish state has maintained a fragile religious balance, and the Temple Mount is indeed the most divisive real estate in the world. Jewish activists for decades have been leading efforts to change the status quo as a matter of religious freedom by demanding, if Muslims can pray there, why not Jews? In Matthew 24, Jesus was speaking to his Jewish brethren, and then he said that in the last days, Israel must watch for an abomination that will take place in the holy place. He forewarned, when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken through the prophet Daniel. And then paraphrases, let the reader understand. More than a quarter of the Bible is prophetic in nature. There are approximately 1,800 prophecies in both testaments combined. God has recorded much of the future as a guide for us. Jesus also gave a major discourse on the end time event that is recorded in all 3 of the synoptic gospels, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. Jesus' disciples had asked him directly, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Jesus answered with a catalogue of tumultuous signs that would lead up to his second coming, adding in Matthew 24:34, verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. And the question, what will be the major sign of that final generation? In Jesus' prophetic briefing, known as the Olivet Discourse, he said that Jerusalem will be in the hands of, once again, the Jewish people, and thus Jerusalem will be the central focus of upheavals. Jesus prophesied in Luke 21:24 that Jerusalem will be trodden down by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So the sign of all signs that has not been present in any generation until now is the reemergence of the state of Israel in 1948. The Bible said Jews would return, and they did after nearly 1,900 years. Such a return to a homeland has never happened before in history. Furthermore, according to Bible prophecy, the Middle East will be in crisis in the last days. And Jesus said in Matthew 24:34, the generation alive at that time will by no means pass away till all these things take place. One of the hottest end time prophecies at the moment is the building of a third temple. This is a big topic in the New Testament Bible prophecy. A very real possibility of a third temple is a sign that no other generation has seen. All the implements of the third temple worship have already been created by industrious and devoted visionaries. Right now, we are living in a time period between the second temple that was destroyed in 70 BC and then the 70 AD, and then the third temple. hardly a week goes by without some Temple Mount controversy for fear that the Jews will mount their house of worship. The Hebrew prophets all proclaimed that in the last days the exiles of Israel will return to the promised land, and restoration of the temple will be their greatest ambition. Ezekiel 37 predicted the dry bones of the nation of Israel coming to life again in their own land. Ezekiel 37:28 predicts, "Then the nations will know that I, the Lord, made Israel holy when my sanctuary is amongst them forever." While Bible prophecy is unfolding before our eyes, many blind skeptics in the church promote erroneous replacement theology and dare to believe that God has rejected the Jews and that Israel has somehow reemerged as a political anomaly. Yes, yet we must ask, what does the Bible teach? We find from Scripture, in both Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, that God has never rejected his people Israel. Isaiah 41 verse 9 declares, "You Israel, I called you from the ends of the earth. I said, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not rejected you." Paul wrote in the book of Romans around the theme of how God has not rejected his people Israel. So just as the prophets foretold, the Jewish people are returning to the Holy Land from four corners of the earth after 19 centuries of global exile. We are seeing the fulfillment of Isaiah 43:5-6. "Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bring your offspring from the east and gather you from the west. I will say to the north, give them up, and to the south, do not hold them back. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth." And whilst all this activity called Aliyah in Hebrew is happening, preparations are well underway to build a third temple. Over a decade ago, temple activists first began holding Passover sacrifice reenactments, and actually I remember these activities to hasten the rebuilding of the temple were talked about for decades. The notion of reviving temple sacrifices have been perceived in the past in Israel as extremism that might incite Muslim retaliation. And so civil authorities refused to grant permits to hold such ceremonies in Israel, in Jerusalem. The police actually prohibited attempts to bring sheep into the old city for sacrifice. However, the mood is changing. The police and the Jerusalem municipality now reportedly view the rehearsal as another totally acceptable public happening, an event they want to see take place. Apparently, even mainstream media have begun to accept temple preparation activities not as a fringe idea, but an important aspect of Jewish culture. A temple spokesman reportedly said, "It seems clear one day, sooner than we imagine, that the sacrifices will happen on the Temple Mount itself, and no one will think it is an extremist event. In truth, anyone who reads the Bible knows this is our ongoing history." Rabbi Moses Maimonides, known as the Rambam, a medieval Jewish philosopher and Torah scholar, wrote that the temple was significant first of all to reveal the mankind of the divine presence of God, and secondly to sacrifice the offering of sacrifices. However, since the destruction of the second temple, the Jewish people could no longer offer sacrifices. In fact, more than 200 of the 613 commandments in the Torah cannot be performed without the temple. The prophet Daniel, Jesus, and Apostle Paul all prophesied that the future sinister figure known as the Anti-Messiah or the Antichrist will defile the third temple before the return of Jesus. Both prophet Daniel and Jesus referred to the temple defilement as an act called abomination of desolation. In Matthew 24, Jesus warned about the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place. And he added, "For the future generation that sees the defilement, let the reader understand." Here, there is a very important prophecy by the Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2:4. "He, the man of lawlessness, will oppose and will exalt himself over everything that is called God or is worshipped, so that he sets himself in God's temple," proclaiming himself to be God. So Christian Bible Prophecy Scholars say that only a man of diplomatic skill who will be accepted by both Jews and Muslims will be able to broker a plan that would allow the Jewish people to worship in the temple on the mount where King David originally purchased the territory. But many Christian eschatologists warn that Daniel 9:27 predicts that this final deal maker, better known as the Antichrist, will break the peace plan. Isaiah 28 verse 18 reportedly calls it the covenant with death that will be annulled. Nevertheless, there are many Israeli organizations making preparations full speed ahead of a third temple. One of these organizations is the Temple Institute, which has a very active presence online. Other organizations also have potentially viable plans. For example, one group proposes pitching a tabernacle-style tent on the Temple Mount that would speed up the end-time scenario significantly, literally overnight, because pitching a tent is obviously much easier and less intrusive than building a building. Other proposals include constructing a synagogue in one of the corners of the Temple Mount platform. Meanwhile, several books have been written suggesting the original site of the temple was in the city of David near the Gihon Spring. So, construction of a third temple in the city of David could conceivably begin without delay and could presumably avoid the territorial controversy surrounding the Haram al-Sharif, that's the Dome of the Rock. Regardless of this future location, the future temples, ritual garments, and vessels have already been designed and created. So the golden menorah, the seven-branched candelabra is on display in the old city's Jewish quarter. Also ready are many Levitical musical instruments, silver trumpets, harps for worship, just as King David organized 3,000 years ago. The Temple Institute School is training certified DNA-tested priests to perform temple services, and many of these services have been rehearsed. A final element, a red heifer, is being bred to be sacrificed in a Torah-prescribed and ritual purification ceremony. In fact, everything is ready for the third temple except its location. Since the liberation of the Temple Mount in 1967, Arabs have made great competitive efforts to claim the entire 37-acre platform, calling it its noble sanctuary. The Muslim narrative has definitely changed with times. A pre-state visitor's guide to the area, published by Muslim authorities in 1925, acknowledged that the territory was once the site of Solomon's Temple. The guide clearly stated that the site's identity with Solomon's Temple is beyond dispute. So in 1925, the Muslims affirmed the biblical history that they are now trying to erase. And then, last few paragraphs and I'm done. So recently, Israel Today magazine reported that proponents of the Palestinian cause have tried to inflate the position of the Temple Mount in Israel, thereby paint Israel's sovereignty as an affront to their religion. But a couple years ago, a renowned Egyptian scholar and novelist acknowledged in a series of TV interviews that Jerusalem holds no particular religious significance for Muslims. In fact, Jerusalem is not mentioned in the Quran, and a growing number of Saudis on social media have taken to using a hashtag that translates as Riyadh, that Saudi's capital, is more important than Jerusalem. Furthermore, lately, some Muslim leaders who are part of the Abraham Accords have admitted that the Temple Mount really belongs to the Jews and that Muslims should be concentrating on the holy city of Mecca. In the light of all this, it's appropriate to pray the prophetic words of Psalm 33. The Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He makes the plans of the peoples of no effect. The counsel of the Lord stands forever. The plans of his heart to all generations. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, and the people who has chosen as his own inheritance. This is written by a Christian Dag, the founder of Jerusalem, the Jerusalem Channel. So, in essence, these articles have given a summary of the essence, the purpose of the Red Heifer relative to the Third Temple. The Third Temple, I've been saying it all the time, that the fact that it's mentioned means the Antichrist period season is quite close. I mean, That's one fact Christians don't want to hear, but well, that's the times we are in. As this one, I just wish I could find just a paragraph somewhere. Yeah. Goes on to say that according to Jewish tradition, the new 7-year Shemitah cycle, which starts at sundown, that's September 25th, that's tomorrow. At the moment, literally, the entire nation of Israel was shut down as Rosh Hashanah begins. That's the feast, celebration of the feast. So the new year, Jewish calendar. Will this be the Shemitah cycle, that's the 7-year cycle, Jewish calendar, when we see the sacrifices in Jerusalem resume once again? If so, will this also be the Shemitah cycle when the Antichrist steps in and puts an end to those sacrifices? It should also be noted that we are also waiting for the discovery of the Ark of the Covenant to be announced. This is something that has been discussed in recent times, but the truth is, by some experts, they have it, but it's more of a very high classified information. So that one, they just keep it to themselves for now. But, you know, Israel plays a key role in end time. You can't talk about end time and leave Israel. So a lot of these things shaping up there in Israel just tells us the times we are in. So we just have to put our house in order, know the times we are in, how to live our lives, and just get ourselves ready for whatever happens and whatever is happening. But these are very interesting times to be a Christian, and let's just hold on and not leave and give up the faith. So God willing, next week I'll be continuing. This recording will be on spiritissues.info so that you can listen to it well again and understand it better. Or the Telegram group, I also drop it there as well. So this is Eben and the station Spirit 88.3 FM. Good night and God bless you.